Blog Talk Radio.
Getting It Right with Dr. Bowles. Good afternoon, my radio listeners. I'm so glad to have you join me this afternoon. I am continuing a series I started now almost a month ago talking about social injustice. Today's topic is something very near and dear to my heart. And I guess when I look at current events and see the movement here in the United States with respect to Black Lives Matter, I am captured by the statistics that are in existence and growing steadily over the last 40 years. And my surprise is there is not more outcry against this travesty. I think about the insurgence now of the refugees coming out of Muslim religious practice countries and the extreme excitement that so many people have and how it's splashed all over American media. I've seen a number of propaganda videos that have been put out showing what they call the invasion of the Muslims into Germany and Switzerland and other European countries that are well known for their colonization activities in history. I study people, and I have over the last year, year and a half, been sharing with my listeners that I've had an introspective journey, and I'm still on that journey. And with my heightened sensitivity to things around me and within me, it just screams to discuss the travesties that American practices versus what Americans want to be known as. They often reference the Statue of Liberty, who, by the way, were given to us from France, and it stands for the freedom for all and justice for all and all of the things that are nice, hyped propaganda for 4th of July. The reality in the United States, particularly if you're born as a Black American, what do I mean by Black American? I'm not talking about a Jamaican American, Haitian American, African American. I'm talking about someone who has been blended with a lot of the Aboriginal people, be it Native American, Inuit, and the Europeans as well. We are the people who are descendants of slaves, those who were brought across the ocean involuntarily and put into positions of servitude without rights, treated like cattle and livestock. That's who I'm talking about, the descendants of the slave, the American people who built the White House, the American people who labored in the cotton fields and built the cotton industry, the peanut industry. That's who I'm talking about. That is to the exclusion of other heavily pigmented people coming from whatever else source of the world. Why am I being so exclusive? Because if you don't identify your topic, then the subject has no meaning. With that established, I did some research in the last, part of all this morning, and it revealed what I suspected. But it troubled me sorely when I saw it actually in confirmed numbers someone else generated for whatever else cause and not for this particular show on social injustice. What I found is the census from 2012 reported there are 18.5 million Black American males, not total population, men, but they said of all ages. They didn't tell me what were the grouping from, say, 16 to 40. It said all ages, 18.5 million Black American men. I did some more research and discovered that the number of Black males aged 16 to 40 is 4 million. And there is certainly a social catastrophic number of Black men behind bars in these United States. There are 900,000, almost a million, Black men aged from 18 to 45. Now, the kicker here is the census told us how many from cradle to grave, 18.5. the incarcerated, or in general, the prime age of the male population globally. When we look at 18 to 45, these are the achievers. This is your military. This is your entrepreneur. This is your young husband. This is your established businessman. This is your wage earner. This is the population cultural security person in the form of a male. In the United States, however, that is where Black Americans are decimated. The men in their prime are not free. They don't take care of their family. They don't establish their own businesses. They don't secure their own culture. Why? Because they are the property. They are the property of an incarceration establishment. And the 13th Amendment, and I've referenced this on a number of occasions, say that all men are free in America except, and the exception is the incarcerated. So lo and behold, take a close look, the major portion of incarcerated persons are Black and Latino men. Therefore, the slave population of these United States continue to be people of color. Why am I calling them slaves? Well, let's talk about that. First, look at the structure in general of the social culture here in the United States for Black Americans. The number of Black American incarcerated is greater than the sum total. Now, this shook me. If you look at how many Black men, 16 to 40, in the prisons, federal and state, in the United States, that number is greater than the sum. I mean, add all of these countries' incarcerated persons, add them up. You're like 5, 6, plus 10, plus 9. If you add the entire number of people that are incarcerated in India, Argentina, Canada, Lebanon, Japan, Germany, Finland, Israel, and England combined, there are more Black Americans in state and federal prison than in those 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 countries combined. That's earth-shattering to me. I'm glad there are those who are out looking for justice of the young people recently killed in the streets of America. I have such identity, family members seeking justice, saying, why kill my child? Why, when they say I'm unarmed or I can't breathe, why doesn't that make a people stop? My answer is the same people are doing things equally and greater every day. And anyone who knows about habituation, if you do it steadily and you do it continuously, it becomes second nature. It is incorporated into your very being. It is no longer an act to be thought about. It's simply an act to do. If you have a habit of coming in your house and you hang your key on a certain hook and you set your purse on a certain chair and you kick your shoes off, there'll come a time when you're very fatigued or you're a little bit distracted, but you still do those motions. And when we don't, for whatever reason, and we go just robotically to the place it is supposed to be, we say it is lost. Well, there is a habituation here in these United States since 1970. It is a 700, that's 7 times. If it once cost a dime, that is now $7, $700, that would be $70, 700%. That's a major, that's unbelievable. I know nothing that grows 700%. In 40 years, 3 million people are incarcerated in these United States. Why such a large jump? Was crime more? No. It is by design. anything that wants to grow finds a way to grow it. If you are a business person and you have a stockholders meeting or you have somebody, you think about what is necessary. In legitimate businesses, we talk about marketing. How do we make someone desire our product? How do we make the product more attractive? How do we make whatever it is we're doing grow? Well, listeners, in the United States, what happened is judicial parts in the United States, along with the social structure of prejudice, played into each other's hands. There was never an exclusionary clause. You could not be a member of the Ku Klux Klan and serve on the judicial board of a court in any part, any state in the United States. There was no clause that said if you openly practice any kind of hate group, you are automatically excluded from inclusion in some other judicial acceptable position. There has been a number of people who have gone out of their way to legislate that that doesn't happen. Think about anti-Semitic situations. There are major outcries if there is a hint of anti-Semitism and a possibility of position of power. But no such outcry has ever been said for the Native American. No such outcry has ever been said for the Black American. And consequently, it is revealed in the very fabric, the very habits, the very attitudes, even now, unfortunately, the very expectations of too many Black Americans. The American prison population increased by 700% from 1970 to the year 2005, now up to 2.3 million people in these United States are not free. I cannot endorse that this is the land of the free. It is not. How can you have 2.5 million people in state and federal? These are not political prisoners in other, like Guantanamo Bay or some other form of CIA or a covert incarceration. I'm talking about on record, on file, brothers, husbands, wives, sisters, daughters in these United States, the land of the free. It just chills me to say, how do we claim a monica that is in such stark contrast of the reality? That's like my saying I'm a white female. I don't come close to passing. I would not want to propagate a concept that is so obviously incorrect. 2.3 million are incarcerated in the United States. Why is that? Well, before we ask why, let's see impact. More than 58% of Black American youth in the year 2013 had one adult parent in prison. Let me say that again. 58%, not 5%, not 10%, 58%, almost two-thirds, a little more than half of all Black American children in the United States had a parent incarcerated. And this statistic was obtained in 2013. There's a whole lot of things incarceration can do. According to the judicial system, it's supposed to be a punishment. According to law enforcement, it's a sense of protection. Those who are free don't have to worry about the malicious of the others. What about those who were incarcerated with tainted drug data, falsified records, unfair changes from misdemeanor to felony charges, district attorneys who, with some covert agreement, would put Black people disproportionately behind bars, and judges who would give them disproportionately high years of incarceration in exchange for capitalism? There's been a recent indictment of a warden who was, I guess, got out of step with the allowable business negotiations of prisoners. For those of you who may not know, there are prisoners are the property of the private prison owners. That's covered in the 13th Amendment, that if you're incarcerated, you are the property. Go and read your Constitution, those of you who run to the Constitution. It allows one man to own another. I hear the outcry when they say, oh, white slavery, or they talk about world trafficking of children. The United States trades in prison incarcerated men every day. They trade on the stock market. They do all kinds of deals with various companies. And what am I talking about? The United States Army actually commissioned some T-shirts to be sewn and monogrammed by prison labor. Why? Because the companies who have prison labor can pay these adult men 25 cents or less an hour legally. There was this big debate on minimum wage and whether or not it should go to $10, and Walmart was slapping itself on the back saying, look at me, we're going to a higher minimum wage. And the bottom line is, if 58% of black children's parents are in prison, that population is making 25 cents an hour. Legal in America. How is that different from a sweatshop? How is that different from having people from another country held to a lower income standard? It is habitually done. America does this, has been doing this. And suddenly, when others start to question, they pretend as if it's an outrage. I was trained in clinical medicine. And when you find an infected area on the body, your first attempt is to do a systemic cleansing of it. That may be transfusions. It may be dialysis. May give you systemic medication by intravenous. But ultimately, if an infected site cannot be contained, you cut off the area in which the infection grows. If it's a foot, you amputate the foot. If it's a leg, you amputate the leg. In extreme cases, such as Fourier's gangrene, the entire pelvic floor may be removed. And that's a horrendous surgery. So if you apply that to social justice, if there is a little bit of tolerance for racism, if it's a tacit understood thing that a person who presides over decisions of lives of those who they have pledged to hate, those who they will clearly stand on the premise they are better than, then how can anyone, black or white, expect that justice can come in such a judicially stacked situation? And what should be the action? Should it be ignored? Should the black Americans forgive, as the situation in Charleston, South Carolina? Is there some penalty, a rap on the knuckles, an apology from the offender supposed to be sufficient? If actions that are appropriate in clinical care apply to that of social standards, then I would say it has to be eradicated. I don't know anyone who would accept an apology for an infection. You would say, remove it, get rid of it, stop it. On occasion, I watch a program and they say, a monster's inside of me. And I listen sometimes more than I look, because the television sensationalism wants to make everything appear extremely gory and very sci-fi like in its monster presentation. But what does interest me
the people's reaction. It's this outrage. How dare this parasite, this bot fly, this bacteria invade my brain, my lung, my kidney, when the bottom line is that's what parasites do. That's what bacteria does. So if we are outraged at the invasion, or I guess a better thinking is outraged at the imposition, how dare that organism impose that stressor on my body and interfere with my normalcy. Well, the Constitution written in 1776 were written by Europeans and people from Scandinavian countries, and it is clear to me in all the studying that I've done, the Constitution was written for those people. They were not writing with an anticipation of inclusion. They fled what they thought were injustices, their freedom of religion, perhaps their freedom to expand. But they imposed the very things that they fled from in their establishing what was good for them. They were parasitizing what was already there. I shared with a friend when I was watching some of the propaganda films on the persons fleeing into Germany and France and other places, and I said, isn't it interesting how when you hear or learn the history of the United States, they talk about explorers who came to North America. They weren't invaders. They weren't refugees and immigrants. They were explorers. And then when they set up these foreign people in somebody else's homeland, they call them colonies. They colonized countries, and they colonized parts of North America. And when they began to grab land and invade established cultural settings, they called them settlers. Settlers moved from the east towards the west, and settlers were the ones who went in and took gold from the hills, and settlers. And I said to my friend, isn't language amazing? If you dub it with a word that sounds friendly or sounds kind, too many comfortable people, and I say comfortable because in America, Americans, we are comfortable. I have had the occasion to live outside the U.S. I've had the occasion to see very extreme poverty in the United States. And those who are comfortable, who have the what Americans would call minimum standard of living, you usually have a car, usually a single home, or definitely if it's multiple home dwellings, it's something that's not overrun with a big population. There's always food available, always the option to go out and buy food, and just comfortable. You have so much money, you can buy food specific for your dog and specific for your cat, and you dress your animals as if they were people, and you buy toys and all kind of luxuries for the animals because that's the only friends you have are those animals. But in a world where people are less than comfortable, where they can be cold in the winter, wet in the rain, too hot in the summer, and more hungry than fed, uncomfortable to sleep, they're more in tune with what's going on around them because their survival demands it. When you're in tune with what's going on around you, you can't ignore. I look at some of the commercials that hit people during Christmas, because sometimes this season, as they call it, Yule time season, puts people in this more self-introspective kind of I love my neighbor attitude. And I look at some of the commercials saying, give $19 a month to make sure this animal does not suffer. Make sure that we'll send you a T-shirt that says you are this generous person who sent money to make sure the animal didn't suffer. And I look at that and think, wow, I am so sure there will be so many people who are responsive to that. Don't let my animal suffer. And I found out the hard way, if you want to call it the hard way, when I was looking at the various animals up for adoption during this season, and I was talking to one of the people who were there to sell one of the dogs, and I said, I have some feral cats that come around my house, and this female's just had kittens, beautiful kittens. There are three of them. And I said, do you have a number I can call SPCA? So someone can benefit from these animals. I don't want a cat, and they are feral, so I don't know how much risk it would be to try to get them tamed, but the kittens could possibly be adopted. And she looked at me and said, in this area, if you call SPCA, they'll pick up the animal, but they don't sell them, they euthanize them. I was struck. I said, what? She said, yes. Every animal picked up by this particular shelter is killed. That's what they do. They are exterminators. I was floored because given the choice between getting these lovely animals killed and letting them find their own way, I don't find them harmful. They haven't injured anything. They don't attack me, so I have no viciousness. I find them rather attractive. So if I, in my effort to do the humane thing, I could actually be sending them to their death. I tell that story because I say we have to be careful what we listen to. We have to be careful in how we are influenced. If you give your $19 a month and the agency does nothing but kill animals, how have you done what it, the advertisements say you're doing? Some would say, well, an excess of animals means that they can have disease, means that they need to be killed. I've heard the same argument when they talk about the world population. And there's all kind of terms for that. Genocide is a big one that comes to mind. As recent as 2014, a high-ranking official in CDC admits that although there was a mission to various countries to vaccinate against polio, it was in fact contaminated with several things that would result in the person getting the vaccine to either be rendered sterile, which means they could have no children, or rendered with a disease that could kill them. In other words, there was an intentional, well-thought-out design to be rid of a population of people based on I'm not sure what. I would venture to think it was color of their skin, but I don't know that for a fact. But this person said his conscience could not keep him silent. And recent data show up to 11 million people were affected by these contaminated vaccinations. So America, we're not a land of the free. We take our incarcerated and pay them 25 cents an hour. We disrupt their family. We destroy their culture. And we're building more prisons. And we're privatizing more prisons. And we have a population of over 2 million people who would look at the Statue of Liberty and spit. America is not the home of the free, but rather a land of exploited, incarcerated persons. Wow. Well, that concludes today's show on social injustice, and I thank you for your attention. Until next time, I ask that you take care.